Okay. Hope everybody's been having a nice summer up to this point. I just wanted to do a quick announcement about something that I have added to the Canvas page. I didn't cover this in the introductory video because I wasn't certain if I'd actually have time to actually get them done. But as it turns out, I do. So if you go to the home page, when you check in and then you go to assignments, you will see a whole new category open up, which is called practice post lab quizzes. So I'm creating some practice quizzes. This will give you an idea of what type of questions I'm going to ask and an idea of what areas that you need to think about when it comes to data analysis and so forth, okay? As the survey, these are not graded. They won't have any bearing on your grade whatsoever. And if you don't understand how to answer one of the questions, you just simply have to come and talk to me and I will gladly go over it for you, okay? So again, this is just to help you prepare for the first post-lab quiz, which will not be this week. It will be next week over distillation, okay? All right. So, when you show up to lab, you will be checking in. Check-in is a very straightforward procedure. You will pick your laboratory spot. There will be a green sheet in front of the locker that you choose. You're gonna go through all the glassware that is currently in the kit. Anything that is missing or broken, you will get replaced at this time. Please pay close attention to this. Because this is when you can get it for free. It never fails that a student forgets to pay attention to all of it. 2 or 3 weeks from now, we ask to use a piece of glassware and you look in your kit and it's not there. And you say, hey, this wasn't there when I checked in. And the stockroom is gonna say, well, we have a signature from you that says everything was present in your locker when you checked in. So please go through absolutely everything and make sure that everything is there so that you don't get charged for something that you can get for free, okay? All right, so after check-in, we're gonna be starting our first experiment, which is distillation. Can anybody tell me what a distillation is? Don't be bashful here, folks. Somebody. Go for it.
It's basically when you have two different substances in a mixture with different boiling points, 500 degrees Celsius. You heat them up, one of them evaporates into another container, and the other one, you know, you have boiling point.
Okay. So in essence, that was correct, okay? The basic answer to what is a distillation, it's a method of separation, okay? So if you have a mixture of substances and you want to separate them, you're going to try and determine what method you choose to separate them. You use a distillation when at least one of the components in your mixture is a liquid. Okay, that's a kind of an absolute criteria. If you're dealing with pure solids, distillation can't work for you because you can't boil a solid. Okay, well, technically you can, but not under normal lab techniques. You have to go to a smelter or something like that. So at least one of the components has to be a liquid. And the way a distillation basically works is you take your mixture, you put it in a container, you heat the solution up, the liquid starts to boil, it vaporizes, you cause that vapor to condense, and you can collect the condensed vapor in a separate container. Okay, so that's the basics of a distillation. And there are many types of distillations that you can choose from. And again, whichever one you choose depends upon the makeup of your mixture. The most basic form of distillation is what we call simple distillation. Select the pen. There we go. And simple distillation is the perfect method to separate a liquid-solid mixture. So let's say you have salt dissolved in water. Any solid dissolved in a liquid, simple distillation is the perfect method to separate. So here is what a simple distillation apparatus will look like, the ones that we're basically going to use. And you start off with the distillation flask. Whoa. Distillation flask. This is where you place the original mixture. It's often called the still pot. Connected to the distillation flask is what we call the distillation head. Good Lord. Please give me a little bit of grace here. I've never actually used one of these for lectures. I take notes with it all the time, but I've never had to make sure my handwriting is actually legible. Okay. The distillation head serves two purposes. The first purpose is a way to connect the distillation flask to the condenser. And the condenser is a jacketed glass tube where water is going to go in at the bottom and out at the top. And this is going to cool the system down, allowing that vapor to condense back to a liquid. It is also a place to connect your thermometer. And when we're doing distillations, oftentimes we want to have a thermometer there because we need to monitor the temperature and so forth. Okay, so the liquid boils up to the distillation head, it condenses, goes through the condenser, and now we have what's called the vacuum adapter. And the vacuum adapter actually serves three purposes. The first purpose is a way to connect the condenser to the receiving flask. And I'm not even going to try that. Go down here. Receiving flask. So this is where we collect the condensed liquid, okay? Also, if you're going to perform a vacuum distillation, this is where you would hook up the vacuum line right here. Why would you choose to do a vacuum distillation? Anybody have an idea? Go for it. So when you're doing something under vacuum, that lowers pressures and boiling points. Okay, so let's say you have a liquid that boils at 300 degrees Celsius. Okay, it's not really practical to do a distillation with that type of liquid at standard pressure and temperature. Okay, however, if we put it under vacuum, we can drastically lower the temperature. So now we can actually do the distillation, you know, with normal types of temperatures. But you don't only do distillations with very high boiling points for vacuum distillations. Let's say you're distilling ether. Okay, ether has a really low boiling point, so you really don't need to put it under vacuum. But let's say you have 1,000 gallons of it. Well, if you put ether under vacuum, you can do that distillation much, much faster than under normal pressure. Okay, so vacuum distillations are used when you either have to lower the temperature or you want to speed up the process. And oftentimes it's a mixture of both. Okay, now if you're not going to do a vacuum distillation, the third purpose of the adapter is that this particular part is left open. Okay, and what that means is that the entire system is not closed, it's open. Closed systems, when you start heating them, pressure starts to build up, all right? And if you're set up to do something like this, then it's not a problem. But If you're not, in other words, you don't have the right equipment, you don't have the training, etc., closed system heating is dangerous. And we are in that second category. We do not have the correct equipment nor the correct training, etc. So in essence, pressure is something that we avoid in this particular lab. So this allows us to heat the system and not worry about the fact that it is a closed system. It's actually open to the atmosphere. Okay, so if we have salt dissolved in water, again, some sort of liquid-solid mixture, you put everything in the distillation flask, the liquid will boil, it boils over, and all of it is collected in the receiving flask, and the solid remains behind in the distillation flask. So the separation is relatively straightforward. Okay, so if we were going to plot this, so this is our liquid solid. And again, let's say it is salt dissolved in water. Then our graph would look something like this, where it would rise very rapidly and then plateau. And that plateau would be right around 100 degrees, the boiling point of water. Okay, so as I said, this is the perfect method for a liquid solid mixture. But we don't always have that situation. Oftentimes we can have two liquids or three liquids mixed together. And so a good question to ask is, simple distillation useful for a mixture of two liquids or more? Can you use it to separate them? How many people say yes? Raise your hands. Okay. How many people say no? Raise your hands. All right. Participation voting, about on par with your generation. So, okay. Just a quick reminder, when I ask questions, I tend to have an inside information as to what the actual answer is. I'm not saying I'm always right, but I usually am going to be right when I ask a question. So if I ask a question, hey, yes or no, and I raise my hand, that's usually the right answer. Okay? Now, also be aware that I can use this as a weapon. Every now and then, I'm getting a little bored, and you guys are a little bored. I mean, you know, 45 minutes into an organic chemistry lab lecture, who wouldn't be bored? And I may just be going along and just raise my hand. And I will always see somebody raise their hand. Just know, I haven't asked a question, I just raised my hand, all right? You and I are gonna have a personal moment. I'm gonna look at you, you're gonna look at me, and then I'm gonna move on. But please know I am dying inside because I got you. All right, it's for me only. It's pure entertainment for myself, okay? All right, so the answer was yes and no. You can use simple distillation to separate two liquids mixed together if the boiling point difference is between 40 and 50 degrees Celsius apart. Now, the reason why it's a range is because it depends upon the two liquids mixed together, and it depends upon ratios and so forth. But in general, if you have two liquids mixed together that meet this criteria, they will separate as if they were a liquid solid type mixture. So let's say we have a situation like this, our liquid-liquid mixture with a boiling point difference of 100 degrees Celsius. So the criteria is easily met. What our graph is going to look like is it will rise, plateau, and at some point it will rise and then plateau. So all you have to do to separate the two liquids is collect during plateaus. Okay? So again, it can be used. But we don't always have situations like this. We know there are plenty of liquids that will mix together that have boiling points that are much closer than that 40 or 50 degrees situation. So what happens if we have this, and let's just say the boiling point difference is 20 degrees C. Let's say, hey, we were just curious, what would happen if we separated, or if we did a simple distillation on this type of mixture? What would our graph actually look like? And in essence, what would happen is it would just kind of gradually rise and rise and rise. And then it may plateau at the end. That does depend upon if There's more of the higher boiling point liquid than the lower boiling point liquid. But throughout most of the distillation, we're not going to be able to separate the two liquids. Okay? So how would you go about that? How do we separate liquids if they don't meet this criteria? And the answer to that question is called fractional distillation. We're not going to talk about that now. We will have a situation where we're going to use a fractional distillation later on in the semester. So I just wanted to bring it to your attention that that is a method you can use to separate two liquids that don't meet the criteria. Okay, so we're going to do a simple distillation experiment. And this is going to kind of serve two purposes. One, it's going to teach you how to do a distillation because we are going to be using this method multiple times during the semester to separate liquids from solids and so forth. And also, we want to introduce you to the GC because we are also going to be using that instrument. So what are we going to do with this experiment? So you're going to start off with 30 milliliters of a mixture of acetone and toluene. And we don't know what the ratio is. Is it 50-50, 60-40? That's what you guys are going to try and determine. Okay? So the first thing you're going to do is you're going to get your 30 milliliters and you're going to set up your distillation apparatus. Okay? It's going to be simple distillation apparatus, but it's going to be a little bit different than the one I showed you here. Okay? So let's take a look at our setup. We're going to be using our 50 mil round bottom flask as the distillation flask. Okay? And in that, we're going to put our 1-inch stir bar. The stir bar is actually important because you want to get the heat distributed evenly throughout the entire solution, and that's what the stir bar does. It mixes the solution, that way you have a much more even boil, and it's much more controllable. And we have round bottom flasks, but our hot plate has a flat top on it. How do we get good connectivity? We use the aluminum heating block. It is a simple block of aluminum that has different indentation sized holes in it. The middle one fits the 50 mil round bottom flask. Okay, so that's the one where you want to put your flask into. And you want to try and center that as perfectly as you can on the hot plate. Doesn't have to be perfect, but as long as you're close to the center, that's really all that matters. Okay. You're going to connect the flask to the distillation head. You are also going to make sure that the thermometer is placed in properly. The thermometer has three components to it. What is going on? I don't like that arc thing. Anybody know how to get rid of that? Okay. Because that wasn't supposed to happen. What happened here? Okay, we're back. You have, of course, your thermometer. You have the rubber adapter. Two B's. And then you have the glass adapter. So there are three parts to it. Make sure you have all three parts to it when you're using it. And you want to have it set up so that the bottom of the thermometer is just equal with or slightly below the bottom of the exit arm of the distillation head. Doesn't have to be perfect, but basically in that position. Okay. And then we're of course going to hook the condenser up to the distillation head, and you are going to hook up the water hoses to the condenser, and again in at the bottom and out at the top. And this is important because filling it up from the bottom means you don't have to turn on the pressure very high. It will fill the condenser completely up and then come out, okay? So doing it from the bottom means you can just slowly turn on the water and it will fill up and you don't have to worry about the hoses falling off. You also want to make sure that you use your hose clamps. To secure the hoses to the condenser. Okay, you're then going to, of course, hook up the vacuum adapter, but instead of a round bottom flask, our receiving flasks are going to be 15 milliliter centrifuge tubes. And you need three of them labeled A, B, and C. Okay, a couple other things about the setup. Wherever you have a glass joint, you are going to use what's known as a keck clamp. That's K-E-C-K. So we'll put a keck clamp here, 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 and here. They're little blue double C discs and they hold the glass joint together. Okay? They're not going to hold it to the point where you can shake it or anything like that. It just holds it together. It gives you that third hand so then when you're setting it up and taking it down, you can briefly let go of something and not have to worry about it completely falling apart. Okay? Another thing is that we are using an aluminum topped hot plate with an aluminum heating block. And aluminum conducts heat very, very efficiently. But the hot plate and the aluminum block are much bigger than the round bottom flask. And so what we want to do is we want to try and force as much heat into the system as possible. So we're going to take some aluminum foil and then just gently wrap it loosely around the distillation side of your setup. Just wrap it around. It doesn't have to be squeezed tight. It doesn't even have to be perfect. The whole purpose of it is to try and, again, force as much heat into the system as possible. And many of you may have worked in other labs where they use ceramic topped hot plates. Ceramic topped hot plates are much, much better than the aluminum ones, but unfortunately they don't stand up very well to aluminum heating blocks. All it takes is dropping it just a little bit, that entire hot plate is ruined. So that's why we use these types of hot plates, and it necessitates that we insulate a little bit with the aluminum foil. Okay, so you set everything up, you have your 30 milliliters in there, and now what you're going to do is you're going to ask your TA to look at the setup and say, hey, does this look right? Are there any mistakes? This is where you want to catch any mistakes. You want to make sure all your joints are put together nice and tight and everything is set up and clamped properly. Okay, one thing about clamping, this is going to be suspended in the air, so you want a clamp holding the distillation side, you want a clamp holding your condenser, and that's really all you need, okay? Then you'll have some way a clamp holding your receiving centrifuge tube. In order to raise the hot plate up and down, we have these lab jacks. These are actually a safety device. They allow you to raise and lower the heating element without actually physically having to touch it. which really isn't a big deal when you haven't turned it on, but when you need to lower the heat, you need to remove the heating element, much, much easier just to crank the hot plate down than physically trying to grab it and move it with your hands. Okay, so the purpose of it is so that you don't actually have to touch it while you're raising or lowering it. Once your TA says, yep, you are good to go, that's when you start. There's one other thing I want to point out is that how you set it up depends upon which side of the hood you're on. Okay, so you want your receiving side closest to the edge of the hood. So there are two working stations for each hood. There's the one on the right and there's the one on the left. If you are on the right hand side, then you're setting it up like this so that the receiver is on the right. Okay, if you are on the left hand side, it is exactly the same. It's just the mirror image of it. The receiving is on your left. Okay, so again, whichever side you're on, the receiving side is closest to the side of the hood. This is important because those water hoses are cut to a very specific length and they're zip tied to that metal scaffolding. So if you set it up improperly, you won't actually be able to reach it properly. So make sure that you've set it up to the correct, receiving his side is on the correct side. Okay. Now, once your TA has given you the okay, you're going to turn on the hot plate, and you want the hot plate started off at about 200 to 230. These numbers don't mean temperature, even though it says degrees Celsius on it. It's just how much heat you're cranking out. Okay, so start it off at about 2 to 230, and you want to put your stir plate on somewhere between 4 and 5. You just want nice mixing. You don't want a whirlpool. So somewhere between 4 and 5 where it's just kind of gently mixing, that's all you need. And then you're going to stand there and you're going to wait a while. And we are going to be collecting some data. We're going to be collecting temperature versus volume data. So we're going to have a crude plot. I do like that feature. Never noticed it was wrong. Okay, so we have our plot ready and nothing's going to happen for a while because it does take a little bit of time for the liquid to reach the top of the distillation head, about 15, 10, 15 minutes, somewhere in there. And it's going to rise very rapidly. It will plateau, and then hopefully at some point it will rise rapidly a second time and then plateau a second time. So the first plateau is acetone and the second plateau is toluene. So this is what your ideal data looks like. Most of you are not going to get it though. You're going to get it, get data that falls into one of two categories. The first looks like this, going just fine, and then it goes straight down. And what's going on here is it's not heating hot enough. And so once all the acetone is gone, not enough energy to keep all the toluene up there. So the solution, of course, is to turn the heat up and you get something that looks like this. So you're collecting the three fractions, A, B, and C. So in the ideal data, it's real simple. But in this data, what do? Well, you do actually have a pretty decent A because when the temperature starts to go straight down, ooh, that's a good chain, a good time to collect A. And then you crank it up, go away. You collect your B and C. So again, you have a decent A, something we're calling fraction B, and hopefully a decent C. The other major category looks like this, where it rises rapidly and plateaus, and then actually it starts going up again, but it never really plateaus the second time. You filled up all your centrifuge tubes and you open up the aluminum and you see that the distillation flask is empty. Okay, so this is kind of the opposite of what happened here. We're heating it too hot. And so basically the acetone went up and flew over, and the toluene actually went up and flew over. And there wasn't enough time for the thermometer to equilibrate to the actual temperature. Okay, so what do we do here? Well, again, when it started going up, you're like, oh, that's my fraction A, easy. If you actually catch this before all the liquid is gone, you'll say, hey, I collected what I'm calling B, and then I have a little bit of C. But oftentimes you don't even have a C, you just have an A and a B. Okay, so one of the things that I want you guys to understand about this lab is that I don't care what your data looks like, okay? You're gonna get the data you get. What's more important is how to look at it, how to interpret it, and figure out what it actually means. Why did I get this kind of data? That is a much more useful tool than going, hey, I got perfect data, but I don't know why, okay? So I know there's a lot of people out there that are like perfectionists, and they're like, oh, I should be able to get perfect data. I was one of them, by the way. Perfect data in a chemistry lab was the only thing I accepted. It caused a lot of anxiety. I don't recommend it, okay? But you don't need to be perfect. You just need to work with the data you have. And the example I always give is making toast. Anybody here ever made toast? Yeah, we all have. You ever burned it? We all have. All you do is put the bread in the toaster and push the button, and you screwed it up, okay? If you're gonna screw up something that easy, but you know exactly why it happens. Last time somebody cooked a bagel and I didn't look at the number and turn it down, you know why it happened, okay? Well, that's what we're trying to do here. I didn't get the perfect data, but I know exactly why I got the data I got, okay? And that's what matters, okay? All right, so we're gonna do the distillation, and we wanna answer two questions. Question number one is easy. Do we really have acetone and toluene? That's not how you spell toluene. So we need to identify that this really is the two solvents, okay? And then the second one is to answer the ratio. So let's think about the acetone and toluene identity first. Well, these plateaus are supposed to be boiling points. And we do know the boiling point of acetone, and we do know the boiling point of toluene. So if our plateaus are close to those boiling points, that's pretty good evidence that we have indeed got acetone and toluene. But even if you get perfect looking data in terms of it rose, and plateaued, it doesn't mean the temperatures are going to be correct. If your thermometer is placed too low, if it's placed too high, or if it hasn't been calibrated properly, you may have perfect looking data, but the boiling point is 20 degrees below acetone and 40 degrees above toluene. Okay? So there's something it looks good, but I actually can't say for certain what I have because the temperatures don't line up. And what happens if you're in class, this class right here, you don't even have a second plateau, okay? So this one may be perfect, but the second plateau never actually occurred. So we might be able to say, yeah, we have acetone and toluene. And by the way, if you smell it, you're gonna know. Acetone has a very distinct odor, and so does toluene, okay? By the way, that's a side observation you can write down in your notebook. I don't want anybody Yeah, that's toluene. No, I don't want you doing that, okay? It's just, if you notice the odor, write it down in your notebook, all right? So we might be able to identify them with the distillation data, but we can't know for certain. What about the ratio? Well, ratio, we actually have some physical data that we have measured. So for each of our fractions, A, B, and C, we know a volume, all right? So we know that our fraction A was 10 mils, fraction B was 10 mils, and fraction C was 10 mils. I always use 10, 10, and 10 because it makes math easy. Whatever your volumes are, you have your centrifuge tube, you look at the volume, that's the volume of that fraction. And now you've got to think, okay, can I get any information to help me say what is the percent acetone and what is the percent toluene in this fraction? No, because, well, let me preface that. We believe that the plateau is pure 100% acetone. And if we have a volume of this, and then we have a volume of fraction C, which is supposed to be pure toluene, and we know what our total volume is, we can get close. Assuming that A and B and C are 100% acetone and toluene. The problem is, we don't know what the ratio of B is. We know it's a mixture, but we don't know, is it 30-60, 50-50? What is the mixture of fraction B? And so because of that, there isn't a way to say with any degree of accuracy or confidence that the ratio is this. You might be able to say it's close to this, but that's all you can go, okay? So the distillation helps separate the fractions, but it really can't tell us the answers to the questions we're really interested in terms of, is it really indeed acetone and toluene, and what is the ratio? And that is where gas chromatography is going to come into play. Oh, geez. Sorry about that. Slow it down. A, T, P, H, Y. Much better. Gas chromatography is another method of separation. In fact, all forms of chromatography are methods of separation. Distillation separates on boiling point. Chromatography separates on attraction. It's based upon the idea that like molecules are attracted to like molecules. Polar molecules are attracted to polar molecules, nonpolar to nonpolar. And regardless of what type of chromatography you're doing, you have two phases. You have the stationary phase, and you have the mobile phase. As a general rule, the stationary phase is polar and the mobile phase is nonpolar. Doesn't have to be this way. The only absolute is that the two phases have a difference in polarity. And so you put your sample into the mobile phase and you push it through the stationary phase, and anything that is attracted to the stationary phase more than the mobile phase will lag behind. And anything that is attracted to the mobile phase more than the stationary phase will pull ahead, okay? And this is how chromatography works. And the best analogy I have ever been able to come up with is you got a party, bunch of people in a room, okay? And two people walk in at exactly the same time. One of the people is popular, one of the people is not popular. And on the other end of the room is the snack table. Who gets to the snack table first? The unpopular kid. Why? Nobody wants to have anything to do with him. This is me, by the way. I'm okay with it. Years of therapy really helped. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry about that. The unpopular kid, people make a room. They just pull apart straight to it. Popular kid, hey, everybody wants to know this person, get around, high fives, chest bumps, fist bumps, all kinds of stuff. He can't get to the snack table faster. Now, of course, this goes out the window when you put beer at the table, but we're, you know, non-alcoholic parties only. Okay. This is how chromatography works. Okay. Now, gas chromatography has an added aspect to it, and that is that as a general rule, molecules separate based upon their boiling points. So lower boiling point molecules will come off first, higher boiling point molecules will come off second. And this works for almost every situation. It does depend upon the volatility of your molecules and the type of stationary phase in your column. But as a general rule, they will come off in order of their boiling point. And in our case, they absolutely will come off in order of the boiling point. Okay, so here we have GC, and we're going to shoot 1 microliter of each of our fractions. And we're going to shoot it into the injector port. The injector port is very, very hot, about 240 degrees Celsius, so please do not touch it. The reason why it's hot is this is gas chromatography. We're injecting liquid, so we want it vaporized to a gas instantly, and that's what happens when it gets into the injector port. Once it's vaporized, it mixes with what is known as the carrier gas. We use helium, but you can use other gases. And the carrier gas is simply the mobile phase of gas chromatography. Mixes with your sample, it enters the column, and they separate. And they come off the column, and they interact with the detector. There are several different types of detectors. We use what is known as FIDs, which is flame ionization detector, but there are others. And the detector is simply something there that says, hey, there's something coming off the column. And it sends a signal to the recorder, and you get a chromatograph, which for us will look something like this. And then underneath the chromatograph, you're going to get a table of data. Okay, so for each peak, you're going to get what is known as a retention time. This is recorded in minutes, and the retention time is simply how long did it take for that molecule when you press start and injected it to the time it interacts with the detector. Okay? So whatever the time happens to be, 1 minute, 2 minutes, whatever it is. And the other piece of data we're going to get is the peak area. That is the area integrated underneath each peak. And the peak area is a direct proportional relationship to the amount of compound in that sample that you injected. So the more of a particular compound, the larger the peak area, the less of a the smaller the peak area. Okay, so gas chromatography can be used for two things. It can be used qualitatively, which is what's here, and quantitatively, how much is here. Okay, so the qualitative side of gas chromatography works with the retention time. So your TA is going to have the original mixture that you started with, and they're going to shoot that mixture on the GC, and it's going to spit out a retention time for the first peak and a retention time for the second peak. Since we know the molecules come off in order of their boiling point, we know the first peak is acetone and the second peak is toluene. Okay? So whatever retention time that first peak is when your TA hands you that information, if your samples, when you shoot it, you have the same retention time. You now had solid evidence that says, yeah, this is indeed acetone. Along with the odor, along with, hey, the boiling point was actually close to it. Now I have three things that are all kind of saying, yep, this is indeed acetone. And if your boiling points are way off, you can say that's why we weren't trusting it, because it's not accurate, okay? So we're gonna identify that we do indeed have acetone and toluene based upon the retention times that we have for our injections and the retention times you get from your TAs. Okay, so that's the easy part. What about the second part? All right, so the quantitative relies upon the peak area. And the peak area, as I said, is a proportional relationship to the amount of sample in the mixture. So one thing you can do, peak one, peak two, we take the peak areas and we add it all up. This gives us the total peak area. Then you can take the individual peak areas divided by the total peak areas, multiply that by 100. Make sure I put this in parentheses. So this gives us percent peak area. If the peak area is a direct proportional relationship to the amount of compound in the sample, the percent peak area is a direct proportional relationship to the percent of that compound in the sample. In other words, that's the information we need to calculate our ratios. So again, we have our table, fraction, A, B, and C. We have the volume. We now have the GC telling us the percent acetone and the percent toluene. And let's just say (80:20, 50:50, 0:100). Whatever your numbers are. Now we can calculate the volume of acetone and toluene in each fraction. Because of this 10 milliliters, 80% of it is acetone. Okay, so that would be 8 and 2. That's why I always do 10, 10, and 10. It's really easy to do math on the fly when you're just moving a decimal place. I one time tried to do it with a 5 thinking it's no big deal, screwed up. So keeping the math simple, okay? And you do this for all of them, and when you're done, see, 8 + 5, that's 13. Yeah, see, I knew it was wrong. That's why you don't do math on the fly. Something that simple, brain shut down for a second. Okay. Well, now we have a way we can calculate the ratio. And we know this is going to be close because the percentages from the GC are pretty good. And we know these volumes are going to be pretty close. We're not going to look at the centrifuge tube and we're going to say, okay, the volume is 10 when it's actually 5. You know, it might be 9.9, so you may be off a little bit, but you're going to be close to what the actual volume is. And so all you do is you take the individual total volume divided by the actual total volume, multiply that by 100, and that gives you the percent acetone and the percent toluene. So we can calculate the ratio, is it 50:50, 60:40, from this information. And do we know we're correct? Well, we are going to have, along with the retention times that our TA gave us, the percentages of acetone and toluene in that actual sample when you started with it. And so you're going to be able to see, hey, I'm close, but I'm a little bit off. Well, why am I off? And that's where you got to try and figure it out. Okay, so after you check in, you're going to do the distillation experiment. The most important thing is you get to the fractions. Okay, so you have your fractions. You may not be able to get through the GC. That is fine. We can finish the GCs next week. But the most important thing is you actually have all of your fractions. If you can shoot the GCs, that's fine. But if not, save your samples. You're going to be in a centrifuge tube. You put the lid on and you wrap some parafilm around the lid. Store it in your locker. Come back next week and you can shoot them. And I say this every single time, and it's actually going to be recorded now. Even if you do finish your GCs, you shot all of them, do not discard your samples. Screw the cap on them, wrap them in parafilm. Why? Every now and then you get bad data, and you may not recognize it right away. And you go home and you start looking at it and go, there's seven peaks here, what do I do? You reshoot it, okay? But if you've thrown away your sample, now it's going to be a little bit trickier, okay? So please keep your samples, even if you do shoot your GCs this week, so that you can make sure your data is good, all right? Okay, any questions? Yes? Oh, you're talking about precision? Okay. This is not an analytical lab. Okay. I am not going to ding you on sig figs. However, do not calculate numbers out to the 19th decimal place. Second, third decimal place only. So on the centrifuge tube, it's broken up into milliliters and then half milliliters. So you'll be able to get it to 9.52, something like that, all right? As long as you're close. All right, one piece of warning, and that is that I have an incredibly bad sense of humor. And my wife and children don't want to listen to my jokes anymore. You're my audience. Okay? And I am going to punish you every single week. And by the way, my favorite jokes are dad jokes, which means they're terrible. All right? And I always start off a semester with a joke that my four-year-old son told me a long time ago. And that is, we're sitting at the dinner table, enjoying dinner. And he says, Dad. And I said, what? He says, what do you get when you cross two roads? And I thought about it, and I was like, I don't know, son, what do you get? He said, you get an intersection. And he just starts laughing. Me, after a second, I rolled off my chair and started laughing. Because my son, my four-year-old son, told a dad joke he came up with all by himself, and it's terrible. But it's also completely true, which makes it perfect, okay? So that is the level of humor that we're starting off with, and it doesn't go any higher, folks. All right, you guys have yourselves a wonderful day. We'll see you in lab. Just a second.